Pride and Prejudice and Zombies by Jane Austen and Seth Graham Smith. Chapter 1. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a zombie in possession of brains must be in want of more brains. Never was this truth more plain than during the recent attacks at Netherfield Park, in which a household of 18 was slaughtered and consumed by a horde of the living dead. "My dear Mr. Bennet," said his lady to him one day, "have you heard that Netherfield Park is occupied again?" Mr. Bennet replied that he had not, and went about his morning business of dagger sharpening and musket polishing, for attacks by the unmentionables had grown alarmingly frequent in recent weeks. "But it is," returned she. Mr. Bennet made no answer. "Do you not want to know who has taken it?" cried his wife impatiently. "Woman, I am attending to my musket. Prattle on if you must, but leave me to the defense of my estate." This was invitation enough. "Why, my dear, Mrs. Long says that Netherfield is taken by a young man of large fortune, that he escaped London in a chaise and four just as the strange plague broke through the Manchester line. What is his name?" "Bingley, a single man of 4,000 or 5,000 a year. What a fine thing for our girls. How so? Can he train them in the ways of swordsmanship and musketry? How can you be so tiresome? You must know that I'm thinking of his marrying one of them." "Oops. Marriage in times such as these? Surely this Bingley has no such designs." "Designs? Nonsense, how can you talk so? It's very likely that he may fall in love with one of them, and therefore you must visit him as soon as he comes." "I see no occasion for that. And besides, we mustn't busy the roads more than is absolutely necessary, lest we lose more horses and carriages to the unfortunate scourge. I don't know how to pronounce that. Oh, God. That has so troubled her beloved heart for sure of late. But consider your daughters." "I am considering them, silly woman. I would much prefer their minds be engaged in the deadly arts than clouded with dreams of marriage and fortune, as your own so clearly is. Go and see if this Bingley, if you must, though I warn you that none of our girls has much to recommend them. They are all silly and ignorant like their mother. The exception being Lizzie, who is something more of the killer instinct than her sisters. Oh, children in such a way. You take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion for my poor nerves. You mistake me, my dear. I have a high respect for your nerves. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, fuck, 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 fuck. Oh, shh. Okay. I have heard of little else these last 20 years at least. Oh, Mr. Bennett was so odd, a mixture of quick parts, sarcastic humor, reserve, and self-discipline, that the experience of 23 years had been insufficient to make his wife understand his character. Oh, God! Fuck! Hope. Her mind was less difficult to develop. She was a woman of mean understanding, little information, an uncertain temper. When she was discontented, she fancied herself nervous. Oh my God! God! Oh my God! Make the dumbest sounds. And when she was nervous, as she was nearly all the time since the first outbreak of the strange plague in her youth, she sought solace in the comfort of the traditions which now seemed mere trifles to others. The business of Mr. Bennett's life was to keep his daughters alive. The business of Mrs. Bennett's was to get them married. Always assuring his wife that he would not go. And until the evening after the visit was paid, she had no knowledge of it. It was then disclosed in the following manner. Crest in the handle of a new sword. He suddenly addressed her with, "Oh, I hope Mr. Bingley will like it, Lizzie." "We are not in way to know what Mr. Bingley likes," said her mother resentfully, "since we are not to visit." "But you forget, Mama," said Elizabeth, "that we shall meet him at the next ball." Mrs. Bennet deigned not to make any reply, but, unable to contain herself, began scolding one of her daughters. "Oh, fuck, 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 fuck. Don't keep coughing so, Kitty. For heaven's sake, you sound as if you've been stricken." I wish I had never heard the name Bingley. I'm sorry to hear that, said Mr. Bennet. If I had known as much this morning, I certainly wouldn't have called on him. It is very unlucky, but as I have actually paid the visit, we cannot escape the acquaintance. The astonishment of the ladies was just what he wished, that of Mrs. Bennet, perhaps surpassing the rest. Though when the first tumult of joy was over, she began to declare that it was what she had expected all the while. How good it was on you, my dear Mr. Bennet. But I knew I should persuade you at last. I was sure you loved your girls too well to neglect such an acquaintance. Well, how pleased I am. And it's such a good joke, too, that you should have gone this morning and never said a word about it. Now, do not mistake my indulgence for a relaxation and discipline, said Mr. Bennet. The girls shall continue their training as ever. Bingley or no Bingley! They shall be as deadly as they are fetching. Now, Kitty, you may cough as you choose, said Mr. Bennet. And as he spoke, he left the room, fatigued with the raptures of his wife. What an excellent father you have, girls, said she when the door was shut. Such joys are scarce since the good Lord saw fit to shut the gates of hell and doom the dead to walk amongst us. Lydia, my love, though you are the youngest, I dare say Mr. Bingley will dance with you at the next ball. Oh, fuck. Oh, my God. What? Oh, said Lydia stoutly. I am not afraid, for though I am the youngest, I am also the most proficient in the art of tempting the other sex. The rest of the evening was spent in conjecturing how soon Mr. Bingley would return Mr. Bennet's visit. Determining when they should ask him to dinner.